With the 36th pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select T.J. Yeldon, running back, Alabama.
He's a really good back in the SEC that played in a pro-style offense, and we just felt like that he wouldn't last to the third round. And sure enough, you know, we got texted after from a few teams and saying, hey, we were going to take him in the second round. And so let's not risk it if we felt like that we can get a guy that could come in and make a difference for us.
Shotgun for Bortles. Yeldon, the running back, dropping. Bortles looks, pump fakes. Pump fakes again, rolls left now. Gets away from a defender, fires to the back of the end zone. That is going to be caught for the touchdown. T.J. Yeldon in the back of the end zone, and Jacksonville has taken the lead. Yeldon, the running back, on third and short. The give to T.J. He's hit at the line of scrimmage. He broke free. Inside the 20-yard line. Inside the 10-yard line. T.J. Yeldon reaching for the goal line. Touchdown, Jacksonville. T.J. Yeldon, second and third effort for the score.
Wow, what a great individual run, but also a great job of the guys up front staying on blocks, because TJ bounced to his right, nothing was there, bounced back to his left, and nobody was coming free for the Buffalo Bills, and TJ yelled and took it to the house.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Oh, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome him back, the returning conqueror. Fat Tony is back from his one-week vacation. You don't get many vacations around here. You don't take many, let's put it that way.
No, I don't.
What'd you do when you were gone?
Not a whole lot. Went
staycation?
Down to Tampa for a day, went down to Orlando for a day, but other than that, was just in town, played a little bit of golf.
The spies saw you out at Orange Park Country Club.
Yeah, I heard. That was one of the rounds I played last week. It was kind of nice. You know, you talk about all the heat and doing the show. You know, I can get off and play golf every afternoon, but I got to go out when it's really blazing, miserable.
Only 98
hot.
Plus, yeah.
So, you know, last week with the week off, I could get out at 9 a.m. or whatever, and I'd be leaving about the time that it got really miserable out there.
It does really make a big difference.
Yeah, and so, like, I felt it. Like, I was out there, I was like, this is not bad. I was like, this is not bad. It's really humid, but it's not bad. But got a couple rounds of golf in the morning, and other than that, just kind of sat around the house, bought myself a birthday present last week.
Which was?
A couple video games.
Okay.
That I could play last week. So I was playing some Fallout 4, and I bought the Mega Man Legacy Collection on the Xbox One, so I got the first Mega Man games in my hands again.
he says with a huge grin on his face.
I do. I love Mega Man. It's one of my favorite
games
of all time.
Happy belated birthday. It was Monday, right?
A week ago.
It was you, Shad Khan, and Jeff Logman.
I realize
that was crazy.
And Nelson Mandela.
Well, yeah, I mean, what did he ever do, right? But outside of that, that's pretty good company right there.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah, very nice. So he's back. He's ready to go. Fat Tony's in the house. I got tons of odds and ends to catch up with from around the National Football League and pertaining to the Jacksonville Jaguars that we'll get into today. The question of the day, Tony, is dealing with uniforms. You know, Tyler's had this, he said, he's been asking me for weeks, can we do this question? And I said, all right, we will eventually. We'll get to it, I'm sure, before the season starts. But I think it's appropriate now with what Chris Sale did with the Chicago White Sox. Didn't like the uniform they
strange.
Were going to wear, right?
So strange.
The throwbacks. He got out some shears, I'm taking it.
What a baby.
I don't think it was a pair of safety scissors that he used, but he got a pair of heavy-duty scissors and cut up all the uniforms so they couldn't wear them out on the field because he didn't like them. Okay, that doesn't work, so they sent him home. But we all understand probably the desire at some point to say, oh, God, get rid of that, throw that thing away, burn it. And let's never see it again, right, in terms of a uniform. So today we ask you, particularly you Jaguar fans who've been following this team since its inception, what is your favorite version of the Jags uniform that they've ever worn in a game, ever, even if it's one time, even if it's bold gold, all right? We've had some pushback against the bold gold. And on the other side, which version of the uniform would you like to take the scissors to? So your least and most favorite versions of the Jaguar uniform throughout the years. Share your thoughts with us on the Jaguars Today Facebook page and on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. Without further ado, we'll take a timeout here. We'll come back, get things started, and take a look at some of the top storylines facing the Jags this week. Training camp, Tony, now It's close. Now, they'll be reporting over the next few days.
They're in the building today.
They're in the building, and we will be over at the building by Thursday at the latest for practices Thursday and Friday, as the season ticket holders are invited to Thursday's open practice.
I mean,
and
then, Blake's going to be talking at, what, 11:30 today?
Today,
yeah,
right.
As he's reporting with the rookies getting in town today as well. So, yeah, it's going. It's football season, people.
It's back, and we're ready to go. We are inside 7 weeks from kicking off the Jaguars' actual regular season. 7 weeks from yesterday, they'll play their first game against the Green Bay Packers. So all the preseason to come. Preseason football, Tony, less than 3 weeks away. It's going to be upon us.
Yeah, you
before
got,
you know it.
I tweeted this out yesterday. You have one more Sunday. You have one more Sunday between now and February where there won't be football of some sort on your television.
Got the Hall of Fame game the following Sunday, right?
Yep.
With Green Bay and Indy.
And even the week four of preseason, there'll be college football that Saturday and Sunday. That'll be the first week of that. So football fans, you've survived it. Another off-season down. It's here.
You've done it. If you want to wish your life away, you are successful, because it is upon us now. Jaguar training camp. We'll get into it coming up next. If you want to get in on the show today, 641-1010, the phone number, and also the text line, driven by Duval Ford. You know the social media angles to get on board as well. With Fat Tony, he's back with Tyler Devitt. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, Jaguars today, Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Training camp week, it's really kind of the kickoff of the season for the Jacksonville Jaguars this week. We'll be out there. Hope to see you out there. And stop by, say hello Thursday, Friday. If you're a season ticket holder, you can come out to Thursday's practice. Their morning practices, which will help you beat, as Tony said, the most oppressive heat of the day, and the team as well, for that matter. Question of the day, which are your favorite and least favorite versions of the Jaguar uniform all time? And I got to say, Duval Doom just voted his fave is the bold gold. He is in the vast minority so far. We've had a flood of never don the mustard color again. I got to admit, I love them. I think you like them too, Tony. They were one of my favorite, really, all time, one of my favorite versions of the Jaguar uniform. I don't know. Something about the look, I really liked it.
For the bold gold?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the bold gold. And I really don't understand all the hate towards that uniform. I've thought that gold should be more a part of what the Jaguars do with their uniform for forever, that it hasn't been used the way that it should be. And honestly, the color they're not using now is teal, and I don't know why. I mean, everyone has white and black in their uniform. Everyone has that. What you have is teal and gold. Use it.
Right.
I mean, that
distinguish
should be
yourself right. from every other team.
That should be what you're using, not the white or the black.
I've never been a fan of the black, the all black.
I don't mind it. You know, like the once a year, I don't mind it. I don't love it, but I don't mind it. I just don't understand why you think that's the uniform you need to wear to distinguish yourself.
This
the gold was so much cooler.
This will tell you just how this is such a personal opinion type question. These are back-to-back tweets within 2 minutes of each other. Andy Giddings says, is it okay to say I like the mustard ones now and the all-black ones are the worst ones? Hashtag Jaguars today. Craig Shoup says, I miss the all-black ones. That all gold can go and never come back. So the exact opposite feeling about it.
One of the weird things about the Bold Rush, the all gold uniforms, is obviously before the game they had the matching uniforms, the top and the bottoms. But after the players played for a while, the bottoms became like a poo color brown because of all the sweat.
The
sweat kind of changed the colors. Looked a little strange in the third or fourth quarter.
Yeah, the sweat paneling was not well executed. But just the basic color of the uniforms I thought was slick. I like the solid color from head to toe.
Now, if they did the color rush again, would you want to see the teal? I'd like to see the all teal. I think that would look really cool.
Well, they're doing color rush again this year, and it's going to be gold.
Yeah.
Oh, have they confirmed that? Oh,
yeah.
Wow, cool.
They showed all 32 teams. Everyone's going to get to wear a bold rush uniform this year. So everyone's going to have a game where they're wearing that uniform, whether it's on Thursday night or whatever. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to happen, but the Jags are in gold again this year.
Can we get all gold helmets? Wouldn't that be nice?
The all-gold helmet or the all-matte black helmet, I'd be fine either way.
One or the other, right? Because I'm looking at a picture that Doom tweeted of Bortles, and it looks like, oh, with the black helmet, oh, but then I see the gold creeping in the back. It's just still a bit of an eyesore, but what are you going to do? All right, so weigh in on that if you choose to. Monday morning quarterback column, couple of things here. One, I want to go back to last week's. Peter King's had some guest writers in on Monday morning quarterback, and I saw an article by Kedrick Golson that was, I thought, just a very interesting one because it's something that we've been saying, I think, for a long time. He wrote it the Monday morning quarterback. This is not on the SI site. This is at the MMQB site. And it was basically about the fact that players can complain all they want about Roger Goodell, but the big problem is we agreed to give him all those powers. Hallelujah! Finally an NFL player with some common sense that says, hey, if you don't like it, you have to be willing to stand up for it at the collective bargaining table. And the players were not willing to miss games during the last work stoppage. And the NFL basically knows that, Tony. And if you say that, well, you know, we're not going to miss games, we're not going to miss paychecks, then you're always going to lose the negotiations in the end because the owners are going to sit back. They've got more money. They can go without. In fact, remember last time the owners got the TV networks basically to still pay them, even if the games weren't played, and they would pay them back at a later date?
Yeah.
Remember that deal that they worked out? The players don't have that kind of power. Golson said, here's the big problem with complaining about the rules as an NFL player. We agree to it. What Goodell gets wrong in the eyes of many NFL players and fans of aggrieved teams and favorite players can often be chalked up to what we as players agreed upon in the collective bargaining process in 2011 during the lockout. And on it goes. And he says, you know, the NFL players should be afforded the same due process as citizens in courts, but it was collectively bargained away. Hooray for Kedrick Golston, who recognizes that when you sign off on that document, that's the power. That's where Goodell gets his authority from, at least when it comes to disciplining players.
Yeah, and the players won some things. You know, during the I mean, we're watching the salary cap continue to go up and up and up. So they got some concessions from the league, but it's not like it's hurting the league. The TV money's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, so the piece of the pie for the players is getting bigger correspondingly to what kind of money is coming into the National Football League, which makes sense, right? Like, that's not a big concession on the part of the owners to say, yeah, if we're going to get more money, we can put a percentage of that back into the, you know, that's fine.
Sure.
You know, we'll do that kind of thing. It's that the players didn't win anything else. You know, they don't like the franchise tag, but they weren't willing to really fight because that affects, what, six players
guys a year or something
right?
like that.
So they're not all going to fight for that because they don't all care about that. Now, you know, Goodell having all this power is something that it seems like it would be worth fighting for if you're the players. But again, there's just, it's a small group of players that are running abrupt of the lead. Like, there's not a big group of guys that are doing these things. It's not a huge group of guys right. that are getting in trouble. It's not a huge group of guys that are they can't stay off the weed, so they're going to get suspended by the league. It's not a big group that is dealing with those things. So I the NFL has an issue with getting everybody on the same page when it comes to these issues. Even if they all don't want Goodell to be the final say, you know, if I'm one of the guys who knows I'm not going to run afoul of the law in the NFL, I'm not missing work.
Right. I'm not missing work. I got more money. What else do I want?
Yeah.
This doesn't impact me. But I think the NFLPA has done a pretty good job PR-wise of making it seem like the rank and file are behind this, right?
Yeah.
That all the players are up in arms about the franchise tag and about Roger Goodell. Look, they may not be happy and they may not trust Goodell with the way that he disciplines players and he is the guy that they appeal that discipline to. Although now the drug policy, that's changed. That is one concession that they've gotten that's going to go to neutral arbitration. So, like,
sure.
For instance, Le'Veon Bell, his suspension of four games for missing reportedly multiple drug tests would not be arbitrated by Roger Goodell. But in the end, they may be upset about it, but like you said, it doesn't really affect them personally.
You stand on the side. It's one of those where you're watching it happen. You're like, man, that sucks for that guy. Stop doing it.
Right.
Like, that would be the next thought in my head is just stop doing that stuff. I mean, you don't have to deal with Roger Goodell unless you get into some kind of trouble. So just avoid the trouble because the vast majority of players in the league do. They're not running into any of this problem.
So that was last week. I just wanted to touch on that because it's rare that you see a player just express the clarity of what is so simple. And every time it comes up, we shout it down, you know, the pushback against the franchise tag and other things like that. And, hey, you agreed to it. I brought this up. I've debated this with Maurice Jones-Drew on our show on Sirius I don't know how many times. And, yeah, but this is da-da-da-da, this, that, and the other. I said, well, you signed off on it. Yeah, but if we didn't sign, we weren't going to get to play. That's your choice.
That's it.
And that is what it comes to in labor negotiations. Are you willing to withhold your services and miss paychecks? And if you're not, in the end, the other side's got the bigger hammer, and they're going to wield it. But this today's Monday morning quarterback column at SI.com, part of the MMQB, Peter King is back. He wrote, here's the problem for the NFL, issues for all 32 teams. Have you taken a look at the article?
I have not.
Okay.
No.
What do you think is the biggest question nationally that he would say problem / question facing the Jacksonville Jaguars this year?
Left tackle?
That's a good one. So I think that's locally, I think we're more concerned about left tackle. He said, is this the year, finally the year that the Jags have enough defense to contend, right? Okay. I think probably here locally we look at it and say, wow, you added Malik Jackson, Tayshaun Gibson, and Dante Fowler will be here, and the rookies, and on and on and on, and other guys I haven't mentioned specifically by name. And do you get the feeling that here we think the defense is going to be significantly improved? I do.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and maybe we've thought that in steps along the way over the last couple of years. We've expected bigger improvements, but I don't think they've brought in this kind of star quality or potential star quality talent in one fell swoop with as many guys. Now, getting it all to play as one cohesive unit, that may be a challenge. Here's what Peter King said. No AFC team did more to build a defense than the Jaguars, who were horrible last year, with Malik Jackson, Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, Prince Amukamara, Tayshaun Gibson. That's five men who at some point this year should all start. He doesn't even mention Fowler, which, of course, you know, is another guy that's coming back who hasn't played a snap. The clock's ticking on the combo platter of general manager Dave Caldwell and coach Gus Bradley, who are 12-36 in their 3 years in North Florida. I can't think of two finer men in those jobs, says King, in the NFL, but they better show significant progress this year, or owner Shad Khan will be tempted to find two different fine men early in 2017.
Hmm.
Don't disagree with that.
No.
Although I do think Dave Caldwell is safer than Gus Bradley. I know their contracts are on the same pace here, but in terms of the talent that he's acquired and the way we feel about this roster now, I think the onus is really on Gus Bradley to get the most out of this talent this year and start winning some ball games. So that's how Peter King sees the biggest problem for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll go through the rest of the AFC South and see where those problems stack up for other teams, and if we agree that those are the biggest things facing them. And are they bigger than what Jacksonville faces and try to improve what was, by some measures, the second-worst defense in the National Football League last year. Fat Tony's here. I'm Mike Dempsey. What do you got before we go to break?
Just want to let people know, too, Dave Caldwell, general manager of the Jags, we just mentioned there, is speaking to the media right now as players coming into the building for the first time for training camp. So quarterbacks, rookies reporting. We'll let you know some of his thoughts here in just a moment.
All right,
well,
that's coming up. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Monday is brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers, the sporting arms, anything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold meets or beats any gun shop's price in the USA. Guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns there. Guns4Jax.com is where you'll find them online. Guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or stop by and see Wild West Guns and Gold. South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville, 693-0777, the number for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. Ongoing on this Monday down at Everbank right now, Tony, Dave Caldwell giving a press conference, a pre-training camp view of where things stand with the football team. Blake Bortles to speak coming up a little less than an hour from now, so we'll have all this audio coming up for you throughout the day and, of course, tomorrow morning on Jaguars today as well. Anything interesting that you've seen of note in some of the tweets from the reporters like Ogier O'Halloran and company down there at the stadium right now?
Sure. Obviously, Caldwell speaking today. It's the first time anyone's had an opportunity to talk to him publicly since Greg Hardy was brought in for a workout last week. So that was among the first things that he was asked about. He said that the team was just doing their homework, essentially, on Greg Hardy. No signing imminent with that guy. Maybe it's a late in the year if they're dealing with some kind of injury issue. Maybe that's a guy that they go back and look at again, but just wanted to do their homework on that. Also followed that up by saying it does not reflect how they feel about the young pass rushers they have on this team. It was, again, just the team doing their homework, whatever that happens to mean. But that's what Caldwell had to say about it.
We spoke a lot about this basically all we talked about on Friday when the news came out Thursday afternoon that the Jags were, in the parlance of the league, kicking the tires on Greg Hardy. And, you know, while nothing is imminent, they're not looking to sign him right now. The fact that you bring him in means you're at least open to the possibility of signing him.
Yeah.
If you're completely not open to it, why bring him in? You don't even work the guy out. The question we asked folks on Friday was, would you support the decision if the Jags opted to sign Greg Hardy? Not would you support the team, not would you, you know, turn your back on the squad, but if they came to Fat Tony and they said, hey, look, we think Greg Hardy can help us in the pass rush this year, you're the determining vote. Tell us, should we sign this guy or not? Knowing all that goes into it, what would you say?
No.
I'm in the same camp.
No. And look, I think I said it during the offseason. I was shocked how little his name came up, especially when the Vernon thing didn't work out, when Robert Ayers signed in Tampa, and that all happened that same weekend. And so now it became kind of scramble mode for a lot of people trying to figure out what the Jags could do with the pass rush, that we only had the name Greg Hardy mentioned once. But I remember my opinion hasn't changed, and that is, I would rather see the team get no sacks than have Greg Hardy on this roster. I mean, that's how I feel. Like, a guy who did what he did, allegedly, or however the heck you want to view it, and is so unapologetic about whatever happened with him and that woman, I don't want any part of that. I don't think it's the same thing as Ray Rice. You know, Ray is a guy who has been trying to do the right thing since that happened. And maybe it was just a moment of weakness with Ray Rice. Maybe it was just a moment of weakness with Greg Hardy. I don't know, but he's been completely unapologetic. I want nothing to do
with it. Acts like it didn't even happen,
right?
Really. Once, you know, claims that the girl beat herself up to make him look bad and all this other stuff. By the way, I did watch an episode of King of Queens last night.
I never put my hand on anyone.
When Arthur Spooner threatened
to do that. Life. No, sir. That's just not how he raised this. As you can tell, like I said, again, it's the Bible Belt. It's just something that's, I won't even say frowned upon. It's non-existent.
Yeah, it's non-existent.
so
domestic battery is non-existent in the Bible Belt, says
so
Greg
ridiculous.
Hardy. It is pretty ridiculous. All right, what else coming out of Dave Caldwell today?
A couple more here, especially on the injury front with things. Jalen Ramsey, send Derek Marks, expected to be a full go when camp opens on Thursday.
Like
so
that.
That's good news. Caldwell also said that offensive tackle Kevin Beachum expected to practice Thursday when camp opens. Not sure if there'll be limitations with him yet or not, but he will be out there on the field.
Yeah, those are from some of the tweets of John Osier at Jaguars.com and others down there reporting on that. And that's good. Kelvin Beachum, I tend to agree with you. I think that is the big storyline facing the Jags, is the battle on the left side of the offensive line, not just tackle, but the ripple effect. Then what happens at left guard is, say, if Luke Jokel doesn't win the left tackle job, we'll see how that all shakes out, but Kelvin Beachum is expected to practice in some degree coming up this week and Thursday as camp opens up. So you figure if that's already the case, it's not going to take him too long to get up to full speed. If he was in danger of injuring himself further, re-injury, you would think they'd be very cautious with this guy and not have him out there at all. So the fact that he'll be practicing in somewhat of a basis on Thursday, keep in mind, they're not going to be full contact right out of the gates in training camp, anything like that. So we'll watch his progress. It'll definitely be one of the more interesting storylines coming out of Jaguar camp starting in just a few days. We mentioned the Peter King article in Monday Morning Quarterback where he said the question is, this the year the Jags finally have enough defense to contend as the biggest issue facing this team? The other issues in the AFC South that he went towards for Indianapolis, will the real Andrew Luck stand up? Says King, his mechanics were often shoddy. He exposed himself to too many hits, took too many dumb chances downfield. Brian Hoyer had a higher passer rating in 2015 by 16 points. And then the Colts paid Andrew Luck the richest contract in NFL history. From the first practice of the preseason on Wednesday, Luck has to show that 2015 was a bad dream. Do you think he will? Is what we saw last year an indication of some bad habits by Andrew Luck catching up to him? Or was it more an aberration based on the way he played in his first three seasons?
Look, I think, I don't know what the real Andrew Luck is going to look like. You know, I think we had a pretty good idea as a guy who was leading that team to 10, 11 wins a year, leading them into the playoffs, and then he 41-16 2 years ago. And I have a feeling that's more the real Andrew Luck than what we saw last year. I think he was a beat-up guy before the season really got started and was playing through injury, and it showed up on the field. And that doesn't mean that it's an excuse for him to play as poorly as he did. at times last year with Indianapolis, but I think the real Andrew Luck is closer to 41-16 than it is the guy that we saw beat up last year.
I think it is too, but I don't know if it's, you know, he does have some bad habits. He does force some throws. He does hang on to the ball too long, which can be a benefit and, you know, a detriment, depending on do you just hang on, and you can't get rid of it. He takes too many hits because of that.
Has to learn to slide this offseason.
I don't
literally
know.
Learn to slide.
I don't know if Ryan Kelly is enough to fix that offensive line either. That's the issue, I think, for Indianapolis, is the rest of the roster around him. Not great. They've got some interesting players at the skill positions, at wide receiver in particular, but they lose Fleener. That doesn't mean Dwayne Allen all of a sudden is going to become a Pro Bowl tight end.
Or healthy.
Right. He's a solid guy. And you know, Frank Gore's 33 years old, and they didn't really address much behind him. They didn't draft anybody. Josh Ferguson came in as an undrafted free agent and has caught some eyes with his pass-catching ability, but he doesn't look like an every-down back. So they've got issues with age, and I think Indy could be one of those teams this year. If things don't break right for them, that team could be headed, even with a healthy Andrew Luck, to a losing season for the, you know, the first time with him at the helm for a full year. He went 11-5 each of his first 3 years. That's what they had for Indy. For Houston, is Brock Osweiler a keeper? The Texans, say King, guaranteed $37 million to a player they never interviewed, never sat down with, never said more than how you doing to in a training camp 2 years ago. But you understand why they did it. A team has no chance to play deep into January without a quarterback, and the Texans didn't have one. The price was the price. This camp, while the J.J. Watt back injury will be very big news, will be all about whether O'Brien can get Osweiler up to speed to play better than he did in his screen test for Denver last fall. I don't think he was terrible in his screen test for Denver, but we don't know. You know, is Brock Osweiler more of an 8-8 type quarterback who's just okay and he can excel if you give him the right weapons around him? I don't think the offensive weapons he has in Houston match right now what he had in Denver, because I think Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders as a combo are better than DeAndre Hopkins and anybody else you throw out as a pass catcher. Lamar Miller is not proven as a feature back. I think the combination of C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman were just as good, if not better. So we'll see. And, you know, while the defense is good in Houston, I don't think it's as good as it was in Denver last year.
No, it's a big gamble that Bill O'Brien really is a quarterback guru. I mean, that's essentially what that contract is with Brock Osweiler. It's saying we saw enough promise with this guy that instead of playing roulette in the draft and giving up whatever capital we're going to get to a point where we can get a quarterback we like in the draft, instead we're going to pay this huge money to a guy that's basically unproven in the league and depend on Bill O'Brien being Bill O'Brien with that guy. And it's a huge gamble for the Texans because it's hard to get out from under this contract if Brock Osweiler doesn't turn out to be the guy here in the first year or two. And it's a team that defensively looks like it's ready to win now. And they have enough at the skill positions, you would think that they should be able to compete offensively if they have a competent quarterback playing. I mean, they won the division last year with Brian Hoyer playing the position for the majority of the season. So there's enough there that this is a team that should be ready to compete now. I'm not sold that Brock Osweiler is the answer to keep them in that kind of position, especially with teams like Jacksonville and Tennessee looking like they are improving in the AFC South. And we'll see if they can, if they found the right kind of answer. But it's a big, big gamble on Bill O'Brien being a guy that can get it out of it.
And then on top of that, you get J.J. Watt. And the story coming out last week, he may be out anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks. The versions varied on how long that will be. He was saying, he tweeted out something to the effect of, "I'll be back very soon."
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean?
Like, I mean, a handwritten
soon,
note or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Soon is a relative thing as far as that goes. But, you know, J.J. Watt has had a lot of cumulative nagging injuries. When you start messing with your back now, you got to wonder. I mean, if they don't have him playing at a defensive player of the year or near that level, which they've become accustomed to as a three-time winner of that award, that defense is not going to be nearly as intimidating. There are other good players on there. Watt makes that defense go, clearly, despite the opinion of some Jaguar fans about just how good he is. And then finally, with Tennessee, what have you heard this offseason about Tennessee wanting to run the football?
Power game.
They want to run it, right? They want to run it a ton, right? DeMarco Murray, they draft Derrick Henry, sign Murray. Mike Mularkey's boring. He wants to run it all the time, right? That's all you've heard all offseason, right?
Yep.
So Number 26, well, the Tennessee Titan, doesn't matter. These are just numbered because to separate them. But will Mike Mularkey and, in parentheses, DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry be the kind of helpful pieces to make Marcus Mariota a star? King goes on to say, Mularkey was a surprise pick as the Titans coach early on. His calm personality has been a good fit with Mariota, who's the same kind of guy. The Titans will experiment with different backfield combos in training camp, and I won't be surprised if this is Peter King. That is typical. I will not be surprised if Mularkey goes from a 38% running team, Tennessee's number last year, to a 50-50 run pass this year. Peter King says that as if it hasn't been the single most talked about thing about the Tennessee offense. You know what? You know, guys, here's something no one's talking about. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you mean the thing that everyone said is going to happen? The fact that Tennessee has said they want to lead the league in percentage of time they're going to run the football? And Peter King acts like it's a found nugget of his due to his amazing journalistic skills. But they want to run the ball. I don't know if they've got enough to win much in the NFL doing that yet. But that offensive line looks pretty good.
They got a couple of horses there in the backfield. We'll see if DeMarco Murray is closer to the guy that we saw 2 years ago in Dallas or the guy we saw in Philadelphia kind of sputter.
A lot of talk that they used him improperly
sure.
in Philly.
The wide receiver position is a mess, but Mariota was playing with that same mess of wide receivers last year, and he was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, as a rookie, he wasn't great, but he was pretty good. I think you got everything you could expect out of Mariota in a rookie season, and he should get better going into year two. I think there's a lot of promise with that Tennessee offense, even if there isn't a whole bunch out there at the wide receiver position right now.
I think there's some intriguing players at the position. It's just not a lot proven at that position. You have Kendall Wright there. Tajay Sharp, who's a rookie, has been kind of the talk of the offseason for that offense. Harry Douglas is there. Rishard Matthews is there, who was an underappreciated guy, I think, in his time with the Miami Dolphins. And then you've got Doriel Green Beckham, who they're not handing anything to, clearly, because they're talking about him being a second-teamer right now, despite probably being the most physically gifted guy there. And Justin Hunter, I think, is about time to give up on him ever helping you out. It's not a super distinguished core, but it's not the Cleveland Browns.
No, either. And it feels like three guys that are kind of the same type of guy, right? That kind of do the same thing for you, that are probably more comfortable as a
slot
receiver.
Yeah.
It feels like you got three. It's not that you can't succeed in the league having that either, and maybe that's something that, you know, Mariota is very comfortable with, but Green Beckham's the guy who has to be that outside threat if that group is going to elevate
and
itself.
And that red zone threat.
Yeah, and we'll see if he can do that or not.
All right, coming up, we've got this date in football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. If you want to get on board, 641-1010. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is, what is your favorite all-time version of the Jaguars uniform and your least favorite? In other words, the one you'd like to take a pair of scissors to, a la Chris Sale. You can tweet us or post on Facebook, and we'll check in on the text line driven by Duval Ford as well. Coming up, this date in football straight ahead on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, before we get to this date in football history, we have an update on the great room. Apparently, if you're entering the 1010XL World Headquarters premises, do not go in there. Because, according to Tyler, hackers' breakfast smells like, quote, awful fish. What kind of fish is awful fish?
I mean, I hope he's not eating bad fish, but it smells terrible. I mean, it was maybe one of the worst smells of seafood I've ever smelled
before.
Like
spoiled fish or rotten fish?
I hope he's not eating spoiled fish. I hope so. But that's what it smells like.
I'm going to guess it's salmon, that hacker's eating salmon today.
Bad.
Salmon's delicious. I don't know what he's having for breakfast. So there's your update there. This date in football history. Hacker is eating some kind of awful fish. For breakfast on what is Walter Payton's birthday, or the anniversary of Walter Payton's birth. Payton, born in 1954, would have been, what did that make him, 62 years old had he still been alive today. Nine-time Pro Bowler, five-time first-team All-Pro. Some of the awards that Walter Payton, the second leading rusher all-time in the National Football League, won. He won the 1977 NFL MVP from just about every association handing one out that year. He won the Man of the Year award in 1977, as well, which has since been named for him, the Walter Payton Man of the Year. 1985, he won the Burt Bell Award as Player of the Year in the National Football League. Burt Bell, a former commissioner of the National Football League. And according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he's a member of the first team all 1970s and 1980s squad pretty good company there
that
for Walter
bad, yeah.
Payton to keep second all-time leading rusher. Rest in peace, Walter. Born on this date in 1964. He had a cup of coffee in the National Football League with the Saints and the Miami Dolphins in the 80s, but you know him as the Jacksonville Jaguars offensive line coach. Doug Marrone turns 52 years old today. Happy birthday, coach. And born on this date in 1978. Not a guy who had a lot of going on for him at the pro level, but Peyton Manning couldn't get the job done. T. Martin said, I'll come and win that national championship for the Vols. It makes Tony very happy to remember that one. Me as well. He turns 38 years old today, T. Martin, born on this date in 1978. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Some breaking news here on the Honda Drive as ESPN reporting right now that Peyton Manning has been cleared of any PED use involved with that Al Jazeera report. Three other players still under investigation by the NFL, but Peyton Manning, who is no longer in the NFL, has been officially cleared. So that happening right now. Seattle and general manager John Schneider have reached an agreement on a five-year contract extension that is expected to make Schneider one of the highest-paid GMs in the National Football League. Schneider's current contract was set to expire after the upcoming 2016 season. Ozzie Newsome is currently the highest-paid GM in the league in Baltimore, making $3.75 million a year. His new deal, Schneider's, is expected to approach that kind of number. Pittsburgh Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell released a rap song a couple weeks ago talking about wanting $15 million a year. The Steelers just want him to figure out how to play 16 games a year at this point. Bell, facing a four-game suspension from the league after reportedly missing multiple drug tests. Bell had his three-game suspension for DWI reduced to just two games to start last season. That was the incident where Bell and his then-teammate LeGarrette Blount were pulled over during a traffic stop. Bell reportedly told the officer that he didn't know he wasn't allowed to smoke marijuana and then drive. Bell has spent the offseason recovering from surgery on his right knee to repair the MCL and PCL in that knee after it was hurt in Week 8 last season, but was expected to be ready for the beginning of this year. Could be facing a four-game suspension. Bell, for his part, is saying that he will not be suspended, that he didn't miss a drug test. We'll see how that whole thing works out.
He says he'll win his appeal. The reporting on Saturday was that he missed multiple drug tests. So we'll find out.
Yeah, if he missed multiple drug tests, he's done.
Good luck with the appeal.
Yeah. If it was just one, maybe he can find some way to win that appeal. Linebacker Aldon Smith, who is currently serving a year-long suspension for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy, decided to give his Periscope followers a peek behind the curtain of an NFL suspension this weekend. We have the audio for you here where you'll hear what is probably Aldon Smith talking to someone who is assumed to be one of the alleged Aldon Smith's friends while the alleged Aldon Smith smokes marijuana. Roll the tape.
I'm not f***ing
with you. Ain't nobody f***ing with us. We got zero followers. Why is the ashtray up? This is what you call a fire up session.
You shouldn't even be posting that.
Do you see my face?
No, but what is it?
They don't have my name. This is just a fire up session.
So if you just put it on there, it's just doing it? It's live? Oh, that's hella stupid.
Shut up. You hella stupid. You trying to smoke, fam? Is this ashtray?
Yep. Because you ain't using them no more, right? Oh, this is a f***ing weed jar? Oh, a weed jar.
Shit. You're stupid. You're tripping. They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Aldon Smith.
Oh, no. They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Aldon Smith.
Click. It's not like I put Aldon Smith.
No.
Oh, Aldon.
Alden.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, but apparently on his Periscope, there are a bunch of archive videos, and it doesn't take a voice analyst to know that this is Aldon Smith who's talking on his Periscope account. So good play there. I hope you enjoy that blunt. Hope it was worth the rest of your NFL career.
Certainly not going to help.
Fire obsession.
Roger Goodell, the NFL's commissioner, went to Stanford to learn some techniques on VR. It was on the Too Embarrassed to Ask podcast, which is distributed through Fox Media. Roger Goodell trying to learn some empathy.
Goodell, to his credit, he came to the lab not to talk about fans. He came here to learn about empathy. He really wanted to understand how to think about issues of race, issues of gender. A lot of our lab's research is about having people think about becoming someone else, and that's why Goodell came.
There you go.
Okay, he's got to learn empathy.
Go to the lab.
He's lizard man without any human emotion. Must learn how to fake empathy.
At least he's trying, apparently.
I guess.
No, it's like a PR move. I mean, I kind of understand it. The idea, especially with all the tension in today's society, to have it, this thing where it's like, here's what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes. It makes sense. It just sounds funny, given the robot that we all think Roger Goodell is, right, having to go learn empathy like he's Johnny Five.
What facial expression should I fake when I'm experiencing empathy?
Oh, my goodness. And that is the Honda Drive around the NFL.
All right. Fun stuff there. I got a couple on the text line here, driven by Duval Ford, before we wrap up this portion of the program. This in regards to what we're talking about with the CBA and Kendrick Golston writing for the Monday Morning Quarterback that, hey, we signed up for this. This is a good point that somebody made here. Said players may have signed off on the CBA, but that was 2011. There are now fourth and fifth year vets who had no say in the agreement. If an average career is 3 years, then the majority of players have already turned over since that agreement half a decade ago. Seems younger guys have more to complain about than older ones because they had no say in the CBA. All right, I can go with that. I can understand that. But I hear a lot of complaining from veterans in this regard, you know, and guys who are were part of that group that signed off on the collective bargaining agreement in 2011. You have a choice to not play if you don't want to. And I understand there are only so many places you can pursue your profession if you're a football player, particularly in the United States of America. So I'm not saying it's realistic to say, oh, well, I don't like the CBA, I'm not going to play football. I'm just saying if you sign off on it, it's kind of an argument that's lost on me. But this is a pretty good point that some young players may have a bit more of a gripe. But those are not typically the ones I hear complaining about that kind of thing.
No, but I mean, it's a good point, and we'll see what happens during the next round of negotiations between the two sides. And my guess is it'll be the same as it is.
Pretty much.
I don't see the players getting a whole lot because I don't think the young players in the league are willing to miss time to get anything done either.
Look, Goodell is adamant about the player discipline, and I don't think anything short of giving him a 17-game regular season from the players' perspective, which the players are fighting against because they don't want to have to play, you know, another series of car crashes, for lack of a more elegant term, and risk their bodies being exposed to that much more trauma without something significant coming back. Because Goodell has always said that this is not something that, you know, is even close to being on the table as far as that goes. Everything's negotiable, but the players would have to give up, I think, a big concession. And in the end, like you said, and we were talking about earlier, Tony, how many people does this really impact? There have been some certainly high-profile cases with the Tom Brady situation, but again, that's one guy. You don't see most starting quarterbacks running afoul of Roger Goodell and having these issues. So as long as it's minimized, I would imagine most of the Patriot our teammates would vote against it. But I don't know if they would hold, you know, would they withhold their vote for it simply on that matter? I don't think they would.
Sure.
You know, this one also in on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. Luck is overrated, in my opinion. Talking about Andrew Luck earlier. He was the benefactor of playing in what was the worst division in football. He's the guy we saw last year. So, well, if you're saying Andrew Luck is a beneficiary of going 11-5 because the AFC South was the worst division in football for those years, well, what was the AFC South last year? It was clearly the worst division in the NFL, and the Jags went 5-11. So by that logic, I don't want to hear you talking up Blake Bortles, right? If Luck is overrated for going 11-5 3 years in a row, 11-5 is 11-5. You know, and it wasn't all Andrew Luck. There was a lot of Andrew Luck in there. And look, I get it. Jag fans don't want the Colts quarterback to be good. And they don't want him to be as good as his reputation is.
Sure.
But he is pretty damn good. And maybe he was a little bit overhyped when he was going 11-5 those 3 years, based on what he did last year. You don't see Tom Brady having a year like he did, like Luck did last year,
no,
a partial year. But he did battle injuries last year, and he's not getting a whole hell of a lot of support from his teammates.
No, he could be overrated and still be really, really good.
Right.
And maybe Andrew Luck was overrated, but that doesn't mean he's a bad quarterback. It just means that maybe everyone overhyped Andrew Luck a little bit. Look, 2 years ago, he was 41-16 and playing in the AFC Championship game. And the
right, 41-16 touchdown, yeah, interception ratio.
And it's not like the roster was a whole lot different last year.
Right. And every year, they went 11-5 and they advanced further every year in the postseason.
Right.
Look, I'm not the Andrew Luck fan club here. I'm just trying to express the version of reality that we've seen with our eyes.
Feels like we have to do that a lot with Luck, and Watt.
Yes, and that's okay. Look, if that's the, kind of the pet thing that the best player on each of the other two teams, because Tennessee hasn't had that one guy who's a standout that's recognized as among the best at his position all across the National Football League the way those two are, that's fine if you want to go that route. 641-1010, if you want to check in, we'll check in on the text line driven by Duval Ford. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Which version of the Jaguars uniform all time is your favorite, and which is your least favorite? Which would you like to give the Chris Sale treatment to and chop it up with scissors? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue along a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today. Not anticipating, heck, you're going to be stuck with us, I think, through December, right, at this point?
Yeah.
Not too many days off between the two of us during football season.
The next day I think either one of us will be taking off is probably Thanksgiving.
That Labor Day?
Yeah.
Something like that, right?
It's whenever the station has a day
right,
off.
Right, whenever the station's giving the hosts off, those are the days we take off. Other than that, football season has begun as far as we are concerned around here. I did see Ghostbusters this week, and you saw it, when did you see it, on the vacation?
Before last Tuesday, so
wasn't
last
terrible.
Weekend. No, it wasn't terrible. I talked about it a little bit on Tuesday night. I thought it was in line with, like, Ghostbusters 2. Like, I didn't think it was any worse than Ghostbusters 2 was, but I don't love Ghostbusters 2. I just kind of,
I'll give you a confession. This is like a hackerish confession, at least as far as I can think of. For me, I don't think I've ever watched Ghostbusters from start to finish, ever.
For real?
Never. Never seen it. I've seen bits, and I'm like, eh. What? I don't get that the big deal is.
What did I tell you, Tyler? Did I not say that last Tuesday that Mike would be the guy that's like, I don't get the big deal with Ghostbusters?
I don't. I really don't.
I've never had that conversation with you, but I called it.
I just don't. I don't know what the big deal about Ghostbusters is the first time. All right.
I haven't seen a minute of it, so don't feel bad.
It's a top 10 all-timer for me.
Top 10?
I love Ghostbusters.
Oh, my God.
I stop to watch it every time it's on TV. I love that movie.
I mean, because you ask Hacker about any movie made
top
you know, outside of what's the one he likes with the guy?
Big Lebowski?
Yeah, that one. Oh, another one. That's just
it gets better with time, man.
No. Masterpiece.
You know what I'm going to do with it then? I'm going to bury it in the backyard, and I'll dig it up in 50 years and see how much better it got. He's never watched a Godfather.
Yeah.
Things like that. How have you not done that? Tyler? Godfather?
I haven't seen The Godfather, but I did start going back a couple years ago. I have seen Goodfellas. The Godfather's next on the list. I mean, you know, I have the worst movie list of movies I've seen in my life. I mean, I have the terrible list. Terrible list.
All right. Well,
Have you seen Shawshank?
I have. It's one of my favorite movies, yeah.
Of course, because you've seen it.
Right.
So it's one of your favorite movies. If you've seen Shawshank, it's one of your favorite movies.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
The book was outstanding, too.
It was great.
Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank
Redemption. No, Ghostbusters was all right.
It was okay, yeah.
It's getting beat up more than it needs to get beat up.
Yeah, I thought, Kate McKinnon's hilarious. I think Kate McKinnon's always hilarious, though. But I'm a big Saturday Night
Hemsworth,
Live.
Man. Stole it.
He did. Mike Hatt. I love Michael Hatt. All right, that's enough about Ghostbusters. 2016 is which I guess they're referring to it as. I've got the biggest injury concern. For every team in the National Football League, it's the biggest injury concern for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Tony, heading into this season.
I'll go the same place I did earlier. I haven't seen this list either, but I'll go left tackle.
Yeah, they agree with you. This is D-Rock writing as the embedded reporter for NFL Nation at ESPN.com. The Jaguars signed left tackle Kelvin Beachum to compete with Luke Jokel and most likely win the job, but Beachum's coming off a torn ACL and didn't participate in OTAs and minicamp. It's not known when he'll be cleared to participate in camp either. This story came out this morning before Dave Caldwell's press conference. The job may go to Jokel, who has been an average player since being taken second overall in 2013. We heard this morning via John Osher on Twitter at the Dave Caldwell presser that Beachum will, in fact, be practicing. We don't know if he's going to be limited or not, but Dave Caldwell himself said that Kelvin Beachum will be practicing on Thursday. So, to me, the fact that he's already going to be involved in some limited capacity right away, I think, I'll be very surprised if he's not the opening day left tackle.
Me too.
Barring a setback injury-wise.
Sure.
As long as things continue to progress. Around the division, the Houston Texans, until last week. They said the biggest injury question mark was left tackle Dwayne Brown. Keep in mind, he went out before the postseason last year, right at the end of the season. What was his injury? Do you remember what it was?
No.
I can't think of it either, but he went out in like week 15 or 16. Was it right at the end? Was it against the Jags that he got hurt in week 17? Is it possible that that happened? I'm just trying to recall this off of the top of my head. But he didn't play in the postseason when they got drubbed 30-0 by the Kansas City Chiefs. But now J.J. Watt's availability for the start of the season is in question. What back surgery to deal with a herniated disc that will start training camp. He will start training camp on the physically unable to perform list. Certainly a pretty big concern for the Houston Texans. You got it on Dwayne Brown?
Yeah, tore his quadriceps against the Jags in the final week of the season.
All right, that sounds pretty significant to me. So you got your best offensive lineman coming off that injury. You've got J.J. Watt with recent back surgery. You've got a quarterback that nobody's quite sure what you're going to get out of. I think there are some significant questions for the division champs, the reigning division champs. Indianapolis defensive lineman Henry Anderson, he was pretty good as a rookie, and Arthur Jones, both coming off injuries that caused him to miss some or all of the 2015 season. Jones' status is the bigger question mark. He's played only 9 games in his 2 seasons with the Colts and will miss the first 4 now in 2016, as it was revealed this weekend that he had a PED violation, performance-enhancing drug policy violation. Jones' effectiveness during training camp will provide a glimpse into how his ankle is progressing. He signed a 5-year, $33 million contract in 2014, missed all of the offseason workouts as he continues to work his way back from injury. So that's another solid player, Arthur Jones, but they can't get him on the field for any stretch of time right now.
No, and the Colts can't afford to not have bullets on that defensive side of the field.
At all.
They're thin enough over there to lose those two guys would be devastating.
Tennessee Titans outside linebacker Kevin Dodd, the 33rd pick in the draft, had surgery in late May to insert a screw in his right foot to repair a stress fracture. The Titans said at the time it was a preventative measure and they expected he'd be ready for the start of training camp on July 30th, but they'll certainly be cautious with a player who could be a third edge rusher behind veterans Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo. If that is their most pressing concern, that their second-round pick may not be ready for the start of camp, that's pretty good. If you're the Tennessee Titans, of course, they're coming off being the worst team in the National Football League, so they have the highest to climb from last year's performance. But if that is your biggest concern, you don't have too many concerns, I don't think, on the injury front.
Yeah, you're pretty good.
Yeah, as far as that goes. So that is a story at ESPN, just kind of looking at the top injury concerns for all of the various teams around the National Football League. You can just focus in there on the AFC South. Ron O'Halloran, with a couple of storylines that he wants to check in on this week. These are the question marks he thinks that need to be, or the questions that need to be answered, or among them for training camp. Left tackle clarity, which we've talked about. Left tackle then falls down to left guard as well, because I don't think you solve one without solving the other. Bortles' progress, where is he right now in terms of consistency? As Gus Bradley said, that's a big thing for him. Take chances, but take calculated chances. And Gus says that'll come with more and more playing times. We'll find out. Can Marquise Lee help? That's a big question. If he can, it's a potentially enormous boost to the Jaguar offense, giving him a dimension, the cliche, taking the top off the defense. A true, pure deep threat, but also a guy that can catch a quick hitch pass and make one guy miss and take it for a long, long way. He's got that quick twitch skill set that we don't see to that degree in all the Jaguar wide receivers. Ramsey's dual role, can he handle the outside? And when they're a nickel, sliding into the inside, is he going to be ready? The fact that he's 100% cleared for the start of training camp along with Sendarek Markstone, I think it cannot be underestimated how big that is, because he is going to be counted on right out of the gates to play a large, large role in this football team.
No, he is, and I keep going back to the conversation that we had with Miles Jack at minicamp, and he didn't have the opportunity to be there because of the rules with the Pac-12, so he couldn't get there till minicamp, and you could feel it with him. He's a freak of an athlete, just like Ramsey is. These guys are athletic freaks, but it's the mental side of the game and how the reps really do affect how effective a player can be. It's not the same as playing in college. And what those two guys are going to be asked to do early on it's going to be interesting to see what the plan is for them, you know, for the first three or four games of the season. Is Miles Jack ready to be the middle linebacker in nickel? Is Jalen Ramsey ready to be that kind of slot corner? Is he ready to do that? I think physically, those guys can do whatever you want to ask them to do. I think mentally, especially going up against guys like Phillip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers, they have to be ready mentally for the NFL game if they're going to be asked to be put in those situations. And can they handle that? Because I think physically they'll be fine with whatever they're asked to do. It's whether or not they can catch up with what's going on at the NFL speed and the level that you have to have it in your head to be able to play those positions effectively.
That goes along with what Gus Bradley told Ron O'Halloran. The outside corner parts of Gus is more playing the position physically. That's what it's more about. Do you have what it takes out there? And nickel is much more mental and reactionary, and that would be the transition for Jalen Ramsey. So, hey, at least the fact he did miss time, but he did get reps, you know, the mental reps on the sideline. He didn't miss all that much time on the field when it's all said and done. If he's ready 100% for the start of training camp, I don't expect that missed time on the practice field to impact him that much. Doesn't mean he's going to be 100% mentally up to the job, because not everybody is as a rookie right at the very beginning. And again, as you pointed out, Aaron Rodgers, Phillip Rivers out of the gates is not going to be an easy transition to the National Football League. And then Miles Jack playing catch up as well, which you alluded to as well, was kind of the number five storyline. One of the stories that came out this morning that you mentioned in the Honda Drive around the NFL has exonerated Peyton Manning. Remember, he was named in that Al Jazeera America report that linked a number of NFL players to PED use. That was from back in December. Peyton Manning didn't have to cooperate with anything if he didn't want to. He's a retired player. He's out of the league. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to answer questions on anything. But Peyton Manning, it's believed, Tony, may want to go into ownership one day, may want to, who knows, maybe be a head coach one day in the National Football League, maybe be a GM. Who knows what he wants to do? It's been speculated he could do any of those things. He's a smart guy. He's a competitor, all these things. So he did, according to the National Football League, comply completely with any request they had, was interviewed, turned over any records he had medically that might, you know, weigh in on this particular subject. And that he was found that there's no wrongdoing. This is a quote from the National Football League. Following a comprehensive seven-month investigation into allegations made in a documentary by Al Jazeera America, the NFL found no credible evidence that Peyton Manning was provided with or used HGH or other substances prohibited by the league's policy on performance-enhancing substances. It was announced today. That's pretty definitive. Now, the question is, what's going to happen with these other players who were named in this? Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, along with James Harrison and Mike Neal, who's still unsigned right now, a free agent defensive lineman, who right now at the NFL, with the NFL's backing, doesn't want to talk about this because they say, look, there's no credible evidence. You can't test us. The NFL says, well, we're not trying to test you. We're investigating. It's a different standard of proof. And look, who's going to win this battle? The NFL is going to win this battle. They always win these battles. They're going to win this in the end. But Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, James Harrison, don't want to be interviewed. James Harrison said he'd do it if Goodell came to his house. Well, you know, it makes for a fun storyline and all that. But in the end, I think these guys are going to have to participate just like Manning did, even though, as Pro Football Talk points out, if the accusations aren't credible in regards to Manning, why would they be credible as to anyone else? Particularly when the guy who was originally the source in the story said he made it all up. You know, the fact that it went this deep and that long. But if it is all made up, this seems just like a power play by these players, or maybe the NFLPA is pushing them into this position to don't capitulate the National Football League. Don't let Roger Goodell expand his powers. I don't think it's a question of them fearing, at least I don't think it's a question of them fearing that they're going to be proven to have done something wrong.
Yeah, I can't remember the details with the Al Jazeera thing as far as what was made up. I can't remember if it was he put out the Peyton Manning thing and basically as a test to see if this guy was going to go public with that information. Then the guy did, and he said, I made it up to see if he was going to betray the information, essentially, and if the other stuff was true. Right, and he made up Manning because Manning was a big enough name that it's going to get everybody's attention just to see if this guy could hold his water, essentially. I don't remember if that's how that story worked or if it was everything is made up in this report, but you do call into question anything in the report if they are willing to make up something about one of the players who's now been cleared by the NFL, too. So we'll see how it works out. But eventually, those three guys are going to have to talk to the National Football League. That's just the way it's going to work if they're going to play football.
Now, this guy has some credibility. Let's not forget, one of the guys he named was a baseball player named Taylor Teagarden. He played in the Cubs minor league system. Taylor Teagarden, 2 or 3 months ago, was popped for 80 games for PED. So this guy did mention Taylor Teagarden, and he's been popped in the last 3 months. So it is interesting to see what happens.
That definitely would give it some level of credibility. But again, this, as I seem to recall the reporting early on, he retracted everything, said he was recorded without his knowledge, right? And who knows? Was the guy just shooting off his mouth? He wasn't testifying to anyone that these things happen. But right now, Peyton Manning's cleared. We'll see what happens with the rest of those guys, Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews, James Harrison, and Mike Neal, who is, as of yet, unsigned this offseason. If you're unsigned this late in the offseason, probably not a good sign for you. By the way, did Will Hill just announce his retirement recently? I want to say he did.
I think so.
I was looking, you know, NFL.com's been doing that series of, you know, the top three players at every position, basically who's the gold, silver, and bronze level player at every position. And so I was clicking through a few of them just to see if any of the new Jags were mentioned. Malik Jackson did not get any love on interior defensive lineman, for instance, didn't get any votes as a top three player at his position. Will Hill got a vote among the safeties, and I'm pretty sure he's announced his retirement and then he's out of the league. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that he kind of snuck in there. I haven't, other than Allen Robinson getting a single third place vote from Gil Brandt, I don't recall another Jag getting a vote, at least one that I saw.
Will Hill currently a free agent, suspended 10 games. He was released by the Ravens in March.
He was released in March, but so he suspended 10 games, but I could have sworn I heard or read something about him that he was done playing. Might be wrong. Either way, never really looked at Will Hill as one of the top three safeties in the National Football League. Pretty talented guy, but anyway, you can check out those rankings. They're all up on NFL.com, but they're not exactly Jaguar rich, let's put it that way. All right, coming back, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today. UniWatch, who do you like, who do you hate in terms of the Jaguar uniforms? Which one was your favorite version all time? Which one could you absolutely not stand and you want to take those scissors to, a la Chris Sale? With Fat Tony, with Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Training camp week is upon us. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Sweet.
Sweet.
Summer.
Summer.
On. 1010.
10.
XL.
XL.
Sweet.
1010. XL.
Summer, summer, summer.
Marquise, you had him with the whole offseason. How important is this next month to pick up where you guys are?
Yeah, I think, you know, these OTAs were really the first time he's been healthy for an extended period of time, and I thought he was awesome. I thought, you know, with Hearns and A-Rob both kind of taking days off here and there and recovering and rehabbing, I think him and Rashad Green got a chance to do a lot more, and I thought they both looked really good. I thought Marquise is obviously an unbelievable explosive athlete when you get him the ball. So I think, you know, as long as he's able to stay healthy, we can definitely use him a ton.
That's Blake Bortles. He's speaking, I think, right now.
Yes,
still
he is.
Going, right? Down at the podium, down at Everbank. That's Tyler Devitt working for you, ladies and gentlemen, to bring you that compelling audio on Marquise Lee. Can he help this team? I can. Can he stay healthy? That's the big question. I think if he does, absolutely, he's going to help this team. I mean, really, they're dangerous four deep. And then your fifth guy, or at least your projected fifth guy, never seems to drop a pass when he does get called on in Brian Walters. So, not a position group you have a whole lot of concern with. You'll hear more from Blake, I'm sure, throughout the course of the afternoon here on 1010XL, and then tomorrow morning in depth on what Blake and Dave Caldwell had to say at their respective press conferences today. I don't know if you saw this, Tony. Tyler and I were talking about this, remarking about this, I think last Thursday when Ryan O'Halloran was in, and Blake went on Barstool Sports. Was it Barstool Sports or is still on that? They're doing a podcast about his wiki.
Oh, it was the Blake Bortles. It was the second installment of the Blake Bortles Wikipedia Club. And,
right, which is like Andrew Luck's book club. But Blake just like, hey, we're just going to do clip notes.
Yeah.
We're going to read a wiki page, right? And so he's talking about this. Here's what Blake. Now, remember, Ryan had asked Blake about talking to Aaron Rodgers and Carson Palmer, what kind of sage advice they had given him, right? And if I were to ask Blake, Tony, and I'm Ryan O'Halloran or any other writer, hey, what kind of advice did you get from these guys? And he told me, and I wrote it. What would you think about that?
That's how it works.
I'm doing my job, yeah. Right? I'm doing my job. This is what I'm doing. Here's the audio of Blake being asked about this whole exchange.
They like ask, you know, hey, do you talk to like other professional quarterbacks? And I was like, yeah, I talk to them. They're like, well, what do they tell you? And I always kind of panic because I can never really remember off the top of my head what they said. So right. I kind of just throw out like broad statements that any quarterback would say to another quarterback. Right. And that's usually what is put in the article.
So you just made up quotes from Aaron Rodgers and they wrote them up in like a newspaper.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we played golf together and had some good conversations, but right. I'm not really sure what it consisted of.
All right, so he does not know, Blake, what Aaron Rodgers and Carson Palmer told him. But the funniest part to me is that the guy asking him questions is this PFT commentator
PFT
guy.
PFT commentator. I think he's more surprised that Blake admitted to making all this up.
Right, but then he's like, so you make things up, and then they actually put him in the article? Like, how the hell are you supposed to know that he's making something up about what did Aaron Rodgers say? Well, he said, hey, you know what?
I love Blake, and I say this in the most loving way I possibly can. Your quarterback is a bro, Jacksonville.
He's a total bro.
I mean, he is just that guy. I have no idea what I talked about. I just kind of say, you know, what
know,
you
man.
Say. Quarterbacks panicking. Tell each other.
You know, we just say, hey, you know what? Really keep grinding. I don't know. Rise and grind.
What did he possibly say? We had some good conversations.
Right.
That's great stuff.
This is probably my favorite Blake sound that we've ever had in the whole system.
You know, you always see people making snowballs and stuff. They don't really ever tell you how the snow actually melts and turns into water, and then you're just wet.
A hell of a point.
That sounds like a boy who grew up in Orlando.
That is a hell of a point. They don't ever tell you about what happens after you make the snowball, man. What are you doing, man?
It's my quarterback.
That's funny.
Oh, well, there you have it. So I just, this guy, like, do you not know how journalism works? We ask them something, they respond, and we talk about it or write about it or what have you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the nature of getting a quote from somebody. So.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll have more of the audio throughout the afternoon here on 1010XL as Blake Bortles is speaking to the media. The quarterbacks rookies reporting for training camp today down there at Everbank Field. And a couple more comments here from Blake. You heard him talking about a couple of the wide receivers. He said that his rookie year, he would look at the schedule and what QBs he would play against. And he says it's not really like that for him anymore. Now he's looking at defenses. Also opened up today by saying that he did spend last week in California with Tom House for 6 days. And says that the priority this year is going to be about quick starts. The way that they've been able to start the second half, he wants to bring that to the first half of game, so that's going to be a priority.
Don't ask him what Tom House said to him, though,
good
during his training sessions, all right? Because he will not tell you anything but generalities as far as that goes. I found that quite amusing last week. Oh, my goodness, are we just ready for football players to be back on the field, and we have something actual to talk about that's going to impact their 2016 season. All right, let's take a quick look at the fan feedback spotlight today. Tony, favorite and least favorite Jaguar uniform versions over the years. What was Twitter saying about it?
Here's what we got from Cameron. All white unis we have now minus the helmet. Cut up the Heinz mustard unis from 2015. Hashtag new helmet. From Liquid Teal. Any uniform with teal is a favorite. Hated the gray Poupon color rush uniforms. From Adam. Current uni with teal tops and black pants. Worst are the early 2000s. From Irish Jaguar, my favorite is modeled by Fred Below. It's the teal tops with the white bottoms they used to wear with the full Jaguar on the shoulders. The scissor-worthy uni is the other one. That's the all-blacks that they wore during the Gabbert era. From Andy, is it okay to say I like the mustard ones now? And all-blacks, the worst one?
Yes, it's
from,
okay.
Yes, it is. From Clay, the best uniforms were the 98-07 home teal Prowler Jag on sleeve. With white pants and road unis with black numbers and pants, and those are the ones that I think a lot of people throw back to. I mean, we're looking at Basile wearing it right now here in the studio.
Yes.
From Joey, favorite is the 2012 black unis with the glitter kitty helmet. Least favorite, bold gold brown mustard. From Jarrell, favorite, teal with full body jag on sleeves, and please cut up those hot honey mustard ones. From Stoff, my favorite is the gold. My least favorite is the all whites that they wore in the Gabbert era. And from Clay, this Jaguars uniform, best home and road, and it's the jerseys we've been talking about a lot here, the teal with the Jaguar on the side, and then the whites with the black bottoms and the Jaguar on the shoulder as well, that they wore basically during like the Taylor Garrard era a lot.
Well, I will grant you that they are more mustard colored than gold, but I still like them a lot.
Still like them.
And as Tyler pointed out, they need to do something about the sweat pattern kicking in and turning it kind of poo brown.
Yeah, I agree with the majority, by the way. I think the teal tops with the white bottoms and the full Jaguar on the shoulders,
the classic.
That's the best they've ever had.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And maybe, you know, these current ones, the worst of the bunch are, to me, the teal with the little black sleeve, right? There's some of the other ones. The white ones don't look so bad. I just, something about those sleeves, I don't love them.
Yeah, the teal alternative they wear now?
Yeah.
You're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No. People hating the bold gold, or call them what you will, the mustard ones. Some of the ones on Facebook, favorite teal jersey, white pants, classic Jags helmets. There you go. You got to cut up the mustard gold and trash compact the dual colored helmets. That's from James. Jamie said favorite was when they had the helmets that had the bluish hue when you looked at them from a certain angle. It was more of a teal hue. I know the ones he's talking about, a little speckled paint that they use. And mm-hmm. I know I'm going to catch hell for this, but I dislike the full teal jerseys. All right, give me a black one any day of the week. Dalton said, I love the jerseys with the Jaguar on the side. I liked it when teal was the primary color. We'd wear black on special occasion. Didn't like the basic black and teal jerseys before Khan changed up the unis, and the bold gold looks uglier each time I look at it. Kevin said, love the first black jerseys they did with the full Jag on the sleeve. Can rip and burn those ugly teal ones before the new jerseys, and can send those gold jerseys to the deepest part of the ocean, never to return. Let me just pick what else was said about that. Hated the bold gold as well. let's see. Needs to be cut up and despise the color rush uni. Needs to be cut up and then burned. Love the all blacks. Want to get rid of the two-tone helmets. All right. Do the bold gold and the all black unis have some connection to soccer teams? I don't know. Do they? I don't think so. And then finally, favorite teal and white from Crown Prince Doc, hated gold garbage. Eh, you know what? Didn't it seem like more people liked them last year?
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's always a small sample size, so it doesn't mean everyone's weighing in on it. But I would have no problem with them going with those gold alternatives once every year for the foreseeable future.
I like them.
I like them, too. All right. I like Fat Tony. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. And you are welcome that we allowed him back into the studio today. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, wrapping things up. Thanks to those guys. Check them out at guns4jax.com, guns4jax.com for all your firearms needs, revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. We'll be back tomorrow and then back out on the practice field for the first time in a long time coming up on Thursday. Hope to see all you season ticket holders out there on Thursday if you can make it out and get the morning off from work for the first Jaguar training camp practice of 2016. And then again, Friday, open to the public at large. More from Blake and Dave Caldwell, I would imagine, throughout the course of the afternoon here on 1010XL. thanks to Tyler Devitt, who's going to go get a little fire-up session in, I believe. And also for Joe Fortunato. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up. Midday Chalk is straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.